Executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside to the VSiN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe hanging out in downtown Las Vegas. Our buddy Michael Lombardi, of course, out in the great state of New Jersey. Michael, happy Easter. How are we doing this morning?
Happy Easter, Femi. Yeah, we're doing great. I mean, we're doing awesome. Beautiful sunny day, the end of March. Maybe we'll start getting some good weather. But yeah, it's a great way to start the day. Great, two great games. Well, I don't know if that one was great, but, you know, enjoyable watching the tournament. Baseball started. We're doing well.
I think some of that Ocean City weather made its way out here to Las Vegas. It was raining all day yesterday, so that's what we had to deal with. But it was a great day to watch basketball inside the women's tournament during the day, the men's tournament in the evening. So it was a good day to go ahead and watch some hoops. We have a fun show on deck for you guys over these next couple of hours. 15 minutes from now, you might have gotten a sneak peek if you're the viewing audience. Julian Edlow of The Sweat here on DraftKings will join us. You can check out The Sweat 8 to 10 Eastern time, Saturdays and Sundays. Julian Edlow will hang out with us to talk some NCAA tournament, his thoughts on yesterday's games, what he thinks of today's game, and also we have the market set for one of the national semifinals, Alabama against UConn. The number is set at 11. We'll get his early thoughts, side and total for the Final Four game coming up next Saturday. Then in hour number two at 11:30 Eastern, 8:30 Pacific, our buddy Jonathan Von Tobel, co-host of VSiN Primetime, our senior NBA analyst, will discuss the tournament, maybe squeeze in a little bit of NBA as well as we're in the final couple weeks of the association here. But Michael, let's start with what we saw last night. And you mentioned we didn't have two great games, but we did have a great performance in Boston. The UConn Huskies, they beat Illinois 77-52. They were laying eight and a half. Didn't matter. They cover once again their 10th straight ATS cover in NCAA tournament play dating back to last season. What more can we say about this team? I mean, they just look like they are on a mission, and I don't know if anybody wants to step in front of that train.
Well, you know, in the first half, I kind of thought they were beatable. They didn't shoot well. You know, Illinois was kind of matching them, you know, and when Klingon was out of the game, they made their run. But obviously, he was the dominating factor in the game. And I don't understand Illinois' insistence on trying to take him on. They weren't calling fouls, right? I got to understand what they were trying to accomplish. They wanted to get him into foul trouble. But since they weren't calling any fouls, it really didn't work out for him. I mean, all he kept doing was rejecting shots. It looked like he was playing on an 8-foot hoop and everybody else was playing on a 10-foot hoop. I mean, it was ridiculous. So credit. What I love about Connecticut is they're playing to a level that isn't about their opponent. They're playing to a standard, and Hurley coaches to a standard, and you could see it. And they don't have anything about them that shows complacency, that shows contentment, which is the disease that gets into all these teams when you start stacking wins together. This is a team that is striving about a standard, about playing to a level that even though, you know, they've reached, they continue to raise the bar higher. And it's just so much fun to watch. I love it. The 30-0 run was just, you knew they were going to take over the game. And, you know, when Underwood said, we're going to keep attacking the rim, I say, God bless, Brad. You know, you're on General Cutler's plan here. You're just going to get run over. And he did.
It made no sense. I was watching it here at the Sportsbook. A lot of Illini fans, I felt a little bit bad for them. There was a bunch of big, I mean, Chicago always gets a nice representation here at Circa. The Midwest is represented strong. And early on, you know, when it was 23-23, they were like, okay, we're in this thing. And then the eventual UConn run happened 30-0, like you mentioned. Just an you usually see that kind of a run in a 116 game in the first round. This was the Elite Eight against an Illinois team that had been peaking. They were ascending. They started playing a little bit better on the defensive end of the floor, which was their big question mark heading into the tournament. Didn't matter. And the fact that they kept going at Klingon, I mean, me and everyone in the sports book is like, what are you doing? Like, the guy, he's taller than everybody on the court. He's blocking the shot. He doesn't have to foul. None of them were fouls. It was all ball, like clear blocks. And I don't know what you mentioned Brad Underwood saying it. I don't get how that could be the plan. You got to go to plan B, plan C, or something else other than driving at Donovan Klingon, because he was the most dominant player on the floor. UConn now on our favorite site, KenPom, number one in adjusted offensive efficiency, number four in defensive efficiency as well. They are a complete team. And that's why the Huskies were the favorite heading into the tournament. tournament, they're now in like a minus, a big minus price, like minus 210, minus 220 to win the national title. And they still have two games to go ahead and do it, but they're an 11-point favorite in this game. And our girl Stormy, she was tweeting yesterday, tweeted out some facts about UConn. Since the start of last year's tournament, Michael, 10-0 straight up and against the spread, average margin of victory, 23.1 points, closest victory, 13 points. This is just a remarkable run. And like you mentioned, this is just UConn kind of playing to a standard, almost playing themselves versus playing the opponent that they see across the floor.
And you really, you know, it was Klingon's game last night, but you don't get the sense that, look, they've got a lot of good players on their team, but they play basketball in unison. And they understand their roles. They play within their roles, and they're great players. And their defensive pressure just wears down on you. And when they don't shoot well, like they didn't in the first half, where they were not shooting from the three-point line or making shots, you know, you're sitting there saying, "Well, they have a chance." And then the second half, they just came out and took over. Somebody sent me a text saying, "Oh, wow, that what did Hurley say at halftime?" And I wrote back, "I don't think he said anything. I think they know what they needed to do." But what I found interesting was Van Gundy's comment. Van Gundy said the college game is way more physical than the pro game, and they're letting them play. I don't know if he liked it or didn't, but I kind of liked it. I thought it was a great physical game. Hurley commented at halftime to Andy Katz about the physicality of the game, which he said benefited Illinois, which I don't think it did at all, because Connecticut can play any way you want to play. And because of their competitive stamina, they don't seem satisfied at all. And I think they see the next game as the biggest challenge.
And how many teams have we seen in this tournament when the three-point shot isn't falling, they just collapse? I mean, we saw Arizona Thursday night, North Carolina Thursday night, Marquette Friday night against NC State. They were 4 for 30-something. UConn did not make threes in this game. They were 3 of 17. A lot of teams in this tournament would not survive that. They go 3 of 7. That's 17%, and they win by 25. They just have so many solutions. All right, the three-point shot isn't falling. Let's go inside. All right, we're hitting threes. Let's shoot threes. Let's play balance. All right, we can play a fast pace. We can play a slow pace. We can defend you. We can lock you down. There's so many solutions that UConn has. It's what makes them so difficult in this tournament, because there's always that game you're not going to shoot it well. And a lot of teams, just when that happens, they put their hands up and say, "Hey, it wasn't our night. 3-point variance. We're going home." UConn says, "No, we don't care. 3 of 17. All right, we're still going to kick your butt." And they did that to Illinois. Like, that, I think, just shows how complete they are, which is why if anyone's going to beat this team, and we'll talk about that coming up all throughout the show here, whether it's the Purdue's, the Tennessee's, the Duke's, whoever, you're going to have to play your A++++ game, and you're going to need UConn to somehow play a D game or something like that if you're going to upset this squad.
Well, you're going to have to play an A-plus game for 40 minutes. See, that's the problem. Some teams can play their A game for 10 minutes to 8 minutes, but they can't play it for 40. And your best player, like Terrence Shannon for Illinois, he can't be 2 for 11 from the floor. I mean, they held Illinois to 25% shooting from the two-point line, from inside the three-point line. That's remarkable. You know, they actually made 6 shots from the three-point line. That was 26%. So, you know, and they shot 3 of 17, as you mentioned, from the three-point line. So they just find ways to kind of make it all work within the framework, and they're selfless. I mean, they are a talented team that understands the goal is to win a national championship, not the goal is to highlight someone's individual talents. It's truly a team, and it's a credit to Hurley for building this culture and the way he coaches hard. You know, we're in a world today where, you know, we don't want hard coaching. We want easy coaching. You know, anytime there's a media report out about somebody coaching players hard, it's like, it gets amplified. Well, you know, look, great players want to be coached. I think Connecticut is a shining example of this. They want to be coached. Nobody's complaining. It's a little bit like what we saw in the Dynasty documentary where Edelman came out and said, "Look, it wasn't what we wanted. It wasn't what we wanted to hear, but it's what we needed to hear." Right? Great players want that. And I think Connecticut's a shining example of this. And it's fun to watch. It really is. It's tremendous. And I don't think if you're counting on them getting complacent, if I were Nate Oates, I would say, "Look, you know, we're David going against Goliath, even though we've won, you know, a lot of games this year. But we're going to have to play a style, and we're going to have to count on a couple breaks. This is Georgetown Villanova, and Villanova's got to figure out a game plan on how to beat them."
Yeah, it can be done. It's just going to be very, very difficult. Right now at DraftKings, UConn -205 to win the national title, which is still crazy to see that they have two games left to go ahead and accomplish that. But they're already at that big minus price given how they've been playing here. You mentioned Nate Oates and Alabama. They defeated Clemson last night in the West Regional Final, 89-82. Crimson Tide, they cover the 2.5-point number there. They go over the total of 163.5. I actually believe that close 3.5, so they covered all numbers if you like the Crimson Tide. And for Alabama, those three-point shots were falling. Mark Sears, he was getting the Jalen Brunson comparisons, all that, the guard for Alabama. Fun player to watch there, the lefty. He can shoot. He's got that in the gym range. If he's in the gym, he's in range from three-point land. And the three-point shots were falling for the Tide. And for Clemson, we saw a team that's elite at free throw shooting shoot 50%. And that ended up being the bugaboo for the Tigers as they bow out in the Elite Eight.
Yeah, and you can't disregard Pringle. I mean, Pringle was sensational, yeah. Right? Nelson got into foul trouble, Pringle, and then Stevenson comes off the bench, and he has his best game of his career. And I think the Pringle was the difference down the stretch. I mean, second chance points, they were able to do that. That's how they stayed in the game. I mean, early in that game, I thought Clemson was going to run away with it, and they didn't. And, you know, they were able to all offset that 13-point lead that Clemson built. And then Alabama just started making their threes and they executed down the stretch. You know, when they turned that ball over, when it was a 5-point game, they had their chance. And then, of course, Clemson misses those two free throws, which were killers. It was killers. So, look, Alabama is one of those teams where they're good. I had them in my Final Four, so I'm happy about that.
There you go.
But if they don't shoot well for an extended period against Connecticut, it's going to get ugly.
Yeah, 44% from beyond the arc for the Crimson Tide last night, 16 of 36. You mentioned Pringle, 16 points, 11 boards. You need other guys to step up. He did so. Bama's moving on to face mighty UConn next Saturday. All right, Julian Edlow in studio next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Make sure you check out the Elite Eight preview, Tennessee-Purdue, over on VSiN.com. Our buddy Zach Cohen wrote about it. Preview and prediction, what he thinks will happen in this afternoon's game in Detroit. Boilermakers and Volunteers trying to break through that glass ceiling and get to the Final Four for the first time in a long time for both of those programs. Tennessee's never done it. Purdue hasn't been there since 1980. Go ahead and check it out. VSiN.com. You need a VSiN Pro subscription, so VSiN.com/subscribe if you want to get the goods from our buddy Zach Cohen. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi, and joining us in studio here at the Circa Resort and Casino, host of DK The Sweat, which you can check out Saturday and Sunday, 8 to 10 Eastern Time, right before us here on the Lombardi Line. It's our buddy Julian Edlow. Julian, how we doing, man? Vegas treating you well? I know you've been out here in the sports book. How are the bets been going?
Vegas treating me well. The early wake-up calls, working on East Coast time out west, not treating me as well. But here we are. You know, the bets are going okay, back and forth. Clemson +3.5, a little frustrating last night when Alabama shoots 44% from three and you, as one of the better shooting teams in the country, shoot 50% from the free throw line. Alabama, I just saw, was 10 of 15 from three in the second half of that game. That's not going to work.
You know, were you surprised? I mean, they end up shooting, you know, they end up 8 for 26, and Girard made 5 of the threes. Nobody else could make a three. And it was just kind of like you expected them to kind of turn the corner. I think everybody at halftime thought Clemson was going to win that game just because they were eventually going to shoot well.
Yeah, that just... these outliers in the tournament, like, you know, you bank on things going the way that, you know, they have all season, and it'll regress to the mean, and then, you know, it doesn't. Everybody thought Marquette was going to start hitting some threes against NC State. They didn't. They kept shooting them, but they didn't. And Hall fouls out late. How many front ends of the 1-and-1s did Clemson miss down the stretch? And then Alabama comes right down. Sears hits a deep, tough three. Like it was just that kind of game. Things went Alabama's way for sure.
Hanging out with Julian Edlow here of The Sweat. Make sure you check it out, 8 to 10 Eastern time, Saturdays and Sundays, right before us here on the Lombardi Line. You mentioned Alabama. Now they go ahead and take on this UConn squad where the market has it right now. The Huskies, 11-point favorites in this game. 11.5 even. It's ticked up a little bit.
We just went back to 11.5 on DraftKings. So
interest coming in on UConn, and how could it not be if you've seen them play over the past month? Total 161.5. We were talking about this before the show started. It's like, how do you step in front of the Huskies? But would you lay that number? Because they've been covering all of these types of numbers dating back to last year in the tournament.
I mean, it's UConn or pass for me, honestly. Like, so you mentioned off the top of the show all those numbers that Stormy tweeted out. They're winning by, you know, in this 10-game tournament run going back to last year, they're winning by, whatever, 25 points per game, and that the smallest margin of victory is 13. Well, the spread's 11.5. They have to have their smallest margin of victory here if Alabama's going to cover. Here's some good stuff from Evan Abrams. Action Network tweeted this out. UConn's laying 11.5 versus Alabama in the Final Four. In the last 60 years, 12 teams have closed above minus 11 in the Final Four. Now, that sounds like a lot. 8 of the 12 were UCLA teams in the 60s and early 70s. So let's throw those out. That leaves 4 real games with 11 or more in the Final Four. Those games were 1999. Duke was laying 11.5 against Michigan State. That game landed 6, so the dog covered. 74, NC State was laying 12 to Marquette. That pushed. 95, Kentucky was laying 14 to Syracuse. That was a 9-point game, so the dog covered. And then the recent one we remember was 2021, Gonzaga UCLA. The number on that game was 14 when Suggs banked the game winner to win by 3. So the dogs in these games, historically speaking, are 3-0-1 against the spread. Do I want to bet the dog? No, because UConn just keeps clobbering people.
Julian, let's talk about Duke, North Carolina State. You know, North Carolina State beats them in the regular season when they're on a 4-game losing streak. They lost, what, 7 out of the last 9 games, North Carolina State. And then all of a sudden they get in this incredible run and they beat Duke in the championship game. And now they're sitting here playing them again. I mean, where are you on this game? Or are you going to take North Carolina State in the points?
I took the 7 points. It feels like too much. It feels like for a combination of reasons. And the obvious one, obviously, these teams know each other well. They're seeing each other again. They've played recently. It feels like it should be a tight game that can stay within 7. So I thought the number was a bit too much. The other thing is Duke's gotten pretty fortunate to, you know, they can be playing well and also be fortunate. It can be both. But you beat 2 double-digit seeds to get to the Sweet 16. And then against Houston, you know, Shed is everything for that team. I had nothing on that game. I wanted to watch some of it. As soon as he rolled that ankle and I saw the tweet of him on the scooter, I was like, okay, Duke, in game. Houston's just not going to have enough. So credit to Duke for pulling it out, but that's pretty fortunate. And now it seems weird to say, like, okay, now NC State is going to be their test, but it is. I'm just still trying to figure out where this NC State team was all year, because you watch them play. You know, we're using the Cinderella because they're an 11 seed in the Elite Eight or whatever, but they pass the eye test every game. They got legit guard play. They got shooters. They got a big man that everybody's fallen in love with that's getting all the moves in the post. They're just kind of like actually a good team that somehow played really poorly throughout the ACC season.
Yeah, no, DJ Burns, everyone who's listening to us and watching us has probably seen him play, but if you have not, I mean, he's absolutely fun.
Mesmerizing.
Excellent passer out of the post, which I think is a very underrated aspect to the post game. You got to be able to be a good passer, and his vision is terrific there. It's a fun game there. But it's interesting, though, this number was 11 when these two teams played 17 days ago on a neutral court in the ACC tournament. Now, obviously, NC State has been upgraded throughout the power ratings, given the fact that they've won 8 elimination games in 18 days, which is kind of wild to say out loud. But, I mean, you wonder, it's like, hey, has it been upgraded too much, or how do you feel with this? But I don't know. I think it's an interesting market. We'll obviously talk more about this throughout the rest of the show here. I do want to ask you about the regional final in Detroit, though. Tennessee, Purdue. Now, be careful. Our producer, Elliot, he is a Purdue fan. He grew up in that area. Jersey. He's got the Glenn Big Dog Robinson jersey on behind the glass. The Boilermakers, laying 3.5, haven't been back to the Final Four since 1980. 147.5 is our total. Who's going? Is it Rick Barnes or Matt Painter? Or who's going to the Final Four?
Yeah, well,
somebody's going. Somebody's going. Somebody's going to kill the curse.
Somebody is breaking through, and I do believe it's going to be Purdue. We got them laying 3 on DK Sportsbook right now. It came back from 3.5. I'm cool with laying 3 with Purdue. I just think Tennessee can absolutely give them a game and stay in this game. But Purdue at their best for more stretches, like, it's not like UConn. They're not UConn, but if Purdue is playing their best for longer than Tennessee can sustain, I think this game is, you know, stays within range all game, and then Purdue kind of pulls away. The ED factor is obvious. He's a great player. You're going to need him to have a good game if you're going to win. It's the guard play with Purdue that I think we need to be talking about more. They have 3 really good guards. They can all handle the ball. They can all pass the ball. They can all shoot the ball. They're kind of just like a better version of Creighton, who was right in that game besides the 18-0 run. Creighton has 3 really good guards and a good big man in Kalkbrenner. Purdue just has a much better big man and 3 even better guards. So I think it's a similar test, just a tougher matchup for Tennessee. And I think this time, you know, Purdue's not going to be on the wrong side of an 18-0 run, I don't think, in this game. So I do like the Boilermakers to pull this one out.
Yeah, I mean, one of the keys is going to be, you know, the way that Tennessee is able to go in those spurts and have those runs that they did, like they did, you know, in the last game. I mean, yeah. when they're shooting, when Connect's going crazy, then all of a sudden. But I think you're right. I think that Purdue can settle it down, because if they go into Eddy, they're going to be able to get points and stop a run.
It's very nice to have a 7'4" center that seems to make all of his little baby hook shots that you can dump it down to, we need to settle down here. That tends to work out pretty nicely for them.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, too, with this game is, how is it officiated? I mean, a lot was made about the game. But these two teams played in Maui. I think Tennessee had, was it 40-something fouls on Purdue and stuff like that? If they don't let them sort of get physical with Purdue,
they certainly played in Boston last night. We'll see if it looks like that.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
They're letting them play in the tourney.
Edie's tough to officiate.
It's good.
Edie's tough to officiate. Like, some of these things, I don't know. I don't know if all the refs are handled. Yeah, no, clinging it. But I mean, Edie, yeah, well, Edie is like, you know, the ninth wonder of the world in college basketball. We'll see what happens later on today, but I tend to agree with you. I think I'd lay Purdue or pass. I'm going to wait to watch the game. I want to see how it's officiated first, though, before I dive in, and we'll see with that one. But he is Julian Edlow. Make sure you check him out every Saturday and Sunday on The Sweat here on DraftKings Network, 8 to 10 Eastern time, right before us here on the Lombardi Line. Julian, enjoy the rest of your day here in Vegas, and safe travels.
Thanks,
back.
Thanks, Julian.
Man.
Appreciate you.
Easy work. I'm just sitting back watching basketball.
I'll be doing that at home. All right, we'll do some good move, bad move, NFL topics next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
For a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free. Just sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes. You can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets or when the money doesn't match public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage of this limited time offer. Visit VSiN.com/splits now to claim your free 2-week access to VSiN's betting splits. Don't strike out on potential winnings. Visit VSiN.com/splits and start making smarter baseball bets today. Major League Baseball season already underway here, first weekend of the regular season. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. Thank you to Julian Edlow from DraftKings, who joined us in studio in the last segment. If you missed it, make sure you check it out in podcast form. Just search Lombardi Line wherever you get your podcasts. But Michael, the NFL news is always circulating. And this past week, we were at the Orlando NFL owners meeting, and we had some interesting nuggets there. So we figured, why not have a segment of good move or bad move? We'll get to all the rule changes in just a bit, but we did see an interesting trade Friday afternoon between the New York Jets and Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles are sending pass rusher Hassan Reddick to the New York Jets for a conditional 2026 third round pick. Is this a good move or bad move?
Well, it's a good move for the Jets. They needed to replace Bryce Huff, right? And Bryce Huff is only 25 years old. The Eagles signed him to $17 million a year. And Reddick fell out of favor with the Eagles. They just felt like they weren't getting enough out of him, even though he has played well for them over the last 2 years. And since his last year in Arizona, Carolina, and 2 years in Philly, he's played very well. So it gives them somebody to help get more pass rush and someone to play next to Quinton Williams inside. This is kind of as a domino trade, right? They don't get Clowney, right? And so now because they don't get Clowney, they have to come back here. From the Jets' standpoint, they're going to probably get a compensatory pick for Huff. Maybe it's a 3, maybe it's a 4. So they'll get that in 25. They're paying a 26-3. And you got to believe with 61% of the play time that unless Reddick gets hurt, they're going to have to pay a 2 in 26, which is a good deal for the Eagles. So the Eagles traded out, right? They traded out Reddick for a younger player. They didn't really save any money, maybe spend a little bit more, but they got a 25-year-old rusher with huge upside and traded away a 29-year rusher and kind of felt like the money ended up being an even exchange. Plus, they pick up a second-round pick in 2026, which it should be a 2, but worse, it's going to be as a 3. So kind of it was a move the Jets had to make because they're all in right now. And it was a great move for Philly because they've replaced Reddick. They didn't want to keep him on the team. They were using his money to sign Huff. The real question here is why just didn't the Jets sign Huff?
That's what I was going to ask
like,
you.
Why didn't the Jets sign Huff? Yeah. Like, why didn't they just go ahead? Why wouldn't they have tagged Huff? I thought we reported this on the shuffle.
Yeah.
We reported this on the show that the Huff was close to doing a deal. And we thought, I did at least, that maybe the Jets would franchise him just to keep everybody at bay, which I think would have been the smarter move, frankly, instead of going through this and then costing yourself a 2. Now, Reddick can certainly help him. There's no question.
Yeah, and for reference here, Bryce Huff is 25 years old, so you'd expect him to sort of continue to be ascending in his career versus Reddick is 29 and is going to turn 30 years old in September. So not to say that he's on the downside or anything like that, but like he's probably reached his peak as a player where this Huff could be ascending. It's just to me, it feels like you could have just signed your guy since that's the guy that you've developed.
Well, one guy started 81 games. The other guy's only started 7, right? Mm-hmm. So we get that. And we understand that. And, you know, look, but when you look over the hurries that the guys had and the quarterback knockdowns, I mean, Huff's had 23 quarterback knockdowns and only 7 starts, as opposed to Reddick's only had 38 over his career. So there's a lot to like about Huff. There really is. There's a lot to like about him. And he gives them a little bit more juice coming off the edge. Reddick almost seemed like, you know, look, if it's not for Reddick now, let's be clear. If it's not for Reddick getting to Brock Purdy, who didn't step up in the pocket, they might not have made a Super Bowl appearance in that game.
Yeah, no, that's one of the big what-ifs. I know the people in the Bay Area definitely say it's a big what-if there. They felt that they could have beat that team, and hey, they did it this past season, so maybe they weren't wrong. Now, I do want to get to some of the other things, but I want to ask you this about a team that you've coined, the New York Ifers, because we said if all yes. these things work out, isn't there the potential for maybe some big upside here for the Jets? Their win total's at 9.5. They're 22-1 to win the Super Bowl at DraftKings. I'm not telling anybody to run out and go ahead and bet that, I'm not falling for it, Mike. I'm just asking the question.
I love you. You're so gullible. You can fall right in. I could see you going before the honeymoon over to the window. I could see this happening.
I love pass rushers, and you acquire pass rushers, I start to get interested. The Jets have done that on the defensive side of the ball.
When they lost Huff, were you not interested?
I mean, they replaced him now. they replaced him with Reddick. I'm just asking the question: is there the potential for this to be much better than what we saw?
Tyron Smith play? Here's a man who's watched Tyron Smith play his whole life.
Yep.
And know that there's a chance of him starting at left tackle for an entire season is probably unrealistic, right?
Yes.
And he's asking me, can the Ifers come back? I mean, look, over 9.5, we'll see. I mean, look, if the Ifers get all their guys, maybe, you know, maybe they could. I mean, Mike Williams is a dynamic player, but
he is.
But Mike Williams' career has been going downhill. Tyron Smith's career's been going downhill. Aaron Rodgers, we don't know where that career is. And one thing we do know about the Ifers, they didn't play the run very well last year at all. So, you know, I mean, look, I do think this, though. I will give this some credibility here. Miami's taking a step back.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where Buffalo is. They've had a lot of losses within their gains and minuses. So I'm not sure the East is as good as it once was. I just don't think, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but I think Miami defensively is going to have a harder time than most people think. And we'll see if they can actually get it back. But the East lends itself to the Jets having a better year. Although I will say this, I think New England will have a better year because if they get a better quarterback and a better kicker, they're going to have a better year.
Yeah, that roster's not as bad as people think it was. I'm not saying that I want to invest in them. I'm just saying that this is a team that I want to do a little bit more work on because they've made some moves that I'd say, okay, like, hey, if they were to work
Big
out,
Daddy,
if
we'll
they
see.
Were to
stay you and healthy. Big Daddy, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see.
I'm a little interested. You mentioned, though, the reason why they made this move for Hassan Reddick is that they missed out on Jadeveon Clowney. Clowney signs with the Carolina Panthers. That deal, 2 years, up to $20 million there from the contract. Is this a good move or bad move for the Carolina Panthers? Clowney going back home.
Well, I mean, 31 years old, you're paying a guy this kind of money who's coming off his best year. You're always a little nervous about that. You know, the hungry soldier always is the best soldier. And now that he's been fed, is he going to play to the level? Remember, last year, he couldn't get a gig. It took him to August to get a gig. And when the Ravens signed him, we all huffed and laughed. And he had his best season as a career pro. And so, look, you know, will he replace Brian Burns? Yeah, he can. If he plays the way he did last year for Baltimore, he easily replaces Brian Burns for 1 year. Now, maybe not for three, but for one. So they're looking at this as like, look, we got a 2 and a 5 for Burns. Clearly not enough. But since they turned down two number ones at one point.
Yeah.
But we got a player that on last year's tape played better than Burns played, which is fair to say. Now, does it make them a better team? I don't know. You know, I mean, I think there's been a lot of moving parts in Carolina, no question. But, you know, this is a big if here, too. Can this guy has had a hard time staying healthy. He did last year. And let's hope he does for Carolina. But it's going to be a challenge. Carolina's moving a lot of pieces within there. They've changed that. That team's going to be completely different. You know, they signed Kasem to rush off the edge. You know, they've got all these other new players that they've tried to integrate within their system. We'll see how it works out.
Yeah, last year was only the second time in Clowney's career that he played in every single game in the regular season. And if you look at some of his sack totals throughout his career, now in 17 and 18, he had back-to-back 9.5 and 9 sack seasons. But after that, it's been 3 sacks, 0 sacks, 9 sacks, 2 sacks, and then last year, 9.5 sacks where he was able to hit those incentives. It's sort of been, like you mentioned, an up-and-down ride here for Jadeveon Clowney. We thought on the GM shuffle that, hey, maybe he signs a little bit later on because that's sort of been his move. That's been the MO for Clowney throughout his career. I'll just sign in August, not have to deal with the OTAs, the spring stuff and all that. We'll just get to training camp. But hey, they gave him a good enough deal and money that he thought was worth it. And he gets to kind of go similar to near at least his hometown. Grew up in South Carolina. The Panthers obviously in North Carolina, but a little bit of a hometown kind of a deal for him, though. So Jadeveon Clowney now with the Carolina Panthers. Baltimore on their side of things, they got Owe, they got Ajabo. I'm not really concerned with the Ravens and their pass rush department, but it is interesting with Mike McDonald now in Seattle, how will that Ravens defense sort of transition moving forward in 2024? I think that's a big thing to kind of keep an eye on throughout this offseason.
Yeah. Zach Gore's only coached 3 years in the league.
Yeah.
Zach Gore's going to be the coordinator. He's only coached 3 years in the league. That's a huge jump.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I mean, I remember the guy who was playing like 5 minutes ago, it felt like. And now he's the defensive coordinator for the Baltimore Ravens. So it's an interesting offseason ahead in the AFC North. But Clowney now with the Carolina Panthers will continue, good move or bad move, on the other side with America's quarterback, Dak Prescott. He's rolling the dice on a 1 year deal. Good move or bad move? We'll discuss it next year on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DraftKings customers. Earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. You can earn up to $2,500 worth of bonus bets in your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now. Use code TLL when you sign up and earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager now. This is specifically catered to our VSiN listeners and viewers. You guys asked for it. We delivered. Go check it out. DraftKings Sportsbook. TLL is the promo. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Michael Lombardi out in New Jersey. Femi Abebefe hanging out here in downtown Las Vegas. And we'll continue on with our good move or bad move news from around the National Football League. And this next one, near and dear to my heart, and a lot of people very interested to see what happens here, is with quarterback Dak Prescott of the Dallas Cowboys. He is expected to play on the final year of his contract in this 2024 season, which will make him an unrestricted free agent in 2025, since he has a no tag clause. He has a no trade clause. He's got all the leverage. Is this a good move or bad move on the Cowboys front? Kind of rolling the dice here with Dak going into the final year of his deal.
Well, the bad news is that he's going to eat $55 million of their cap. He traps them between him and DeMarcus Lawrence. That's $75 million of the cap that's eaten with two players. You know, and that now they need, we need to do Lamb. You know, they still have Diggs's contract. Gallup's June 1, a casualty. But I think what this does is it traps them into not making very many moves. They're going to have to rely on the draft tremendously. And what does it do for Dak? I mean, Dak has been overpaid for 5 years based on his level of performance. Kirk Cousins takes all the heat for not winning playoff games, and Dak slides away. And, you know, Dak eats all the money. I mean, Dak doesn't pass the salt when he's at the table, because he wants all of it, and God bless him, he should do it. But don't be crying when you don't have a lot of good players around you. We've seen this before, right? We've seen that, you know, Mahomes isn't the highest paid quarterback in the league. He allows his team to have some flexibility. So Dak's got to make a decision. You know, is somebody going to outbid Jerry? I doubt it. I don't think Jerry's threatened by that at all. I think Jerry will pay what he has to pay. He's in a tax-free state, so he certainly gets a discount there. And, you know, why would you ever want to leave being the starting quarterback of the Cowboys to go somewhere else to be a starter? The reason Cousins left Minnesota is because Minnesota wasn't going to pay that. If Jerry's going to pay it, he's not leaving.
Well, if he's going to pay it eventually, why not pay it now is the question, because at least couldn't you theoretically get him cheaper now versus waiting this time next year?
Well, I think that the question is, and you answered yourself the question, you're not getting him cheaper now. I mean, he would sign him if he could get a good deal now. If Dak came to him and said, look, why don't we just extend this out? I'll do X, Y, and Z. They'll give us free up some money. See how you want to do it. But I'm sure Dak's sitting there saying, I got all the chips. I'm going to test the market and see what I could do. Somebody's going to have to call your bluff. Somebody's playing chicken here. And if I'm Jerry, I'd call his bluff, because Dak's hurting the team. I mean, at $55 million on the cap with $29 million in base salary, you could really lower the cap number and sign two good players that could help your team. Mm-hmm. But you can't do that unless you get cooperation from the player.
Would the Cowboys ever do what the Vikings did and try to break free from the quote-unquote Dak Prescott jail?
I think a lot of that depends on what they think of Trey Lance. I mean, you know, I don't know if you've been talking to Jerry about maybe Trey Lance could be their guy. See, that's the thing. At some point, these teams that have been trapped by quarterbacks who don't produce playoff wins and Super Bowl wins end up saying, we can't do this anymore. Like, we just can't do this anymore. Like, we can't become a prisoner to our own team. And if somebody else is willing to do it, God bless. But we know Dak's strengths. We know Dak's weaknesses. We know what he brings to the table. And we also know that if he's thrown it over 35 times a game, we're probably not going to win, that we're going to need to have it a different way. And so we need a better team around him. But when he takes all the money, it's hard to have that better team around him. Look, I think the Cowboys overachieved last year. I don't think they underachieved. I think they overachieved. The offensive line didn't play well, right? And I think this is a residual effect of having all this money tied up in five or six players. Again, it worked for the Rams. It did. It worked for the Rams. And maybe it can work for the Cowboys. But the Rams were unique.
And this Dak is heading into year 9. And usually at this point, you kind of fear, you know whether this is the guy that's going to win you a Super Bowl or not. Like, there's no mystery here. We've seen thousands of Dak Prescott games, not literally, but we've seen a lot of Dak Prescott games. And as a fan, I think Dak's a good quarterback. Is he going to ultimately win the Cowboys a Super Bowl? I don't think so. Like, I think I can confidently come to that conclusion there, especially at the price tag that he's playing at. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't see the Jones family doing the what Minnesota did, but if I was running the team, I think that's the path that I would go down. I'd say, hey, man, let somebody else go ahead and do it, and let's restart this thing and try to go with a different path forward here to ultimately win a Super Bowl.
You know, I don't disagree with you. I think when you look at his career, is he a good player? There's no question.
Yeah.
You know, but he's going to be 31 next year, right? And, you know, we're sitting here saying, when is this all going to change? When are we going to be able to handle what we need to handle? And what is going to make us a better team? Now, you know, last year he had, I know this sounds completely strange because he lost Kellen Moore, the greatest offensive coordinator in the history of football. But last year was his best year in terms of not throwing bad passes. Hmm. He was only poorly throwing 11.7 of the throws, right? And that was, and last year, 2 years ago, it was 17.3%. The year before that, it was 14%. So he's throwing the ball with more consistency. It was his best on-target percentage season that he ever had. The best at 82.6%. Every other year was at 76. So they found they found what he does really well, but they need more. They need right now they don't have a running back on their team. They need more from him.
And there's now reports that both the Cowboys and Ezekiel Elliott would be open to a reunion. We'll see if they go down that path there to go ahead and bring Dak's best friend Zeke back to the team. But yeah, I think I don't think you're going to get better of what we saw with Dak Prescott. He was top three in QBR, top three in EPA per play. Like, that's about as good as the season you'll find from Dak Prescott. And what did it get the Cowboys? An embarrassing home playoff loss in the wild card round.
Well, I mean, Dak didn't play defense. In fairness, Dak didn't play defense, though, Femi. I mean, they couldn't stop Green Bay.
Yeah, they got killed.
I mean, that's where it all comes down to. They couldn't stop Green Bay. And that's where the misconception about how talented they are as a team. Yeah, I mean, Parsons is really talented. Lamb's really talented. But they're not as good as everybody thinks they are in terms of their overall strength. They need a great draft, and that's always hard to do.
Yep, you're up to bat, Will McClay. Go ahead and do it later on this month. All right, let's get to the next one. NFL owners, they passed the new hybrid kickoff rule at the annual league meeting. This is like similar to the XFL rule there. If you haven't seen it, look it up there. But is this a good move or bad move, this new hybrid kickoff rule, in your opinion?
I don't like it. I think it's too gimmicky. Plus, I think it takes away, Femi, the ability to have the onside kick to gain an extra possession when you need one in a game. You know, when you're playing people in a game, you're going to need an extra possession. So, and now you have to call everybody up and say, hey, we're going to do an onside kick. So why don't you all come up here? And I don't like that at all. I like the fact that, you know, New Orleans doesn't beat Indianapolis if they don't get that onside kick. So I think it takes a little bit out of the game.
Yeah, no, I'm open to it because I think we're going to see more returns, but I will miss the surprise onside kick, which you mentioned. Like, now you'll have to kind of wave the white flag saying, hey, onside kick time, and then everybody comes on up there. This next one, the NFL also banned the hip drop tackle at the league meeting. Is this a good move or bad move?
Based on what the players are saying, they don't like it. And based on watching, you know, Scott Novak at his backyard throwing flags, it can only get worse, right? I mean, he's loosening that arm up tremendously to throw more flag. I don't like it. I think to me, if they could explain what they're going to call and how they're going to call it to the players so that the coaches can teach it properly, then you're all for player safety. But there's so much disconnect between what they're showing you and what they end up calling on the field. And if they're not going to replay the call, it's problematic. I think we're going to all say sometime in October that, man, that was a bad call, and we're going to regret this rule because they're overcalling it. And there'll be an adjustment to it, trust me. There'll be an adjustment to it. And this is kind of a thing where I think you've got to make sure, if you're going to call it, you got to make sure you see it. You just can't assume it. And sometimes the more we put into play where they don't see calls, but they assume it, then we get into problems.
I mean, officiating feels like it's hard enough as is. Now you got them looking out for this hip drop tackle. I don't know. I get the safety aspect of it here, but also you're kind of trying to make the cigarettes safer. Like, football is a violent game. It's a physical game. Injuries happen. There's only so much you can do. I mean, honestly, this last one here, NFL owners extend the trade deadline to week 9 now, a week, allowing teams to go ahead and make those trades. Good move, bad move?
Well, I think it's a good move because I think it gives teams a chance to say we're not in it. I mean, the reason John Mara said he didn't trade Saquon Barkley last year at the trade deadline was he felt he was still in it. Now, I don't know if he was going to the games, if he could have said that watching the games, but he did, right? Like, there was never a moment when I watched the Giants last year that I felt like they were in it, right? Like, there was just no way. But he did, and so he didn't trade him. Now, he'll probably, will he get a compensatory pick back for him? I would assume so, but they've spent some money too. But I like this move because it allows you to say to your team, look, we're going to make sure we do what we have to do for the future.
Yeah, I guess he gives you an extra week to evaluate the big landscape there with your roster. All right, that does it for hour number one. Hour number two, we'll discuss some more NFL coming up next.